Welcome to the Mattcast. You're listening to a podcast that strives to bring the church world and the art world closer together. My name is Matt Anderson, and I am so glad you can join us today. Also, if you can remember that on Apple or iTunes podcasts, a 5-star rating and review is greatly appreciated. My guest today is a man of many talents. We have him here today because he is the author of 3 books, one very recent. But let me tell you a little bit about him first. He received his Bachelor of Science in Chemistry from Lake Erie College, an MA in Theology and Theological Studies from Evangel University. And then at that point, he really went into full-time ministry and was serving as a youth pastor. And while doing that, achieved his Master of Business Administration from Bluffton University. In 2011, he founded Agape Tremont, which was a hybrid art gallery and church. And I don't know if we'll have time to talk about it, but I would love for you to hear about that. On the near west side of Cleveland, Ohio. He's been an adjunct professor at Malone University. He's worked for Bank of America, New York Life, and presently he is a business systems analyst for AML Light Source in Cleveland. Steve Rosenberger, welcome to the Mattcast.
Hey, Matt. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome to the loft. Isn't this just a really highfalutin setting up here?
It is. It is. I especially love the breeziness.
Yeah, we have to shut off everything to record. We have absolutely no air conditioning. We are such martyrs. Hopefully this won't take us, 3 hours, or else, this could turn into a whole different sort of an interview. It'll be a sweat box up in here. But it's good to have you here. So right out the bat, what makes a person who has been in ministry on various levels and someone who has been in business for many years, what makes that person decide to be a writer?
Well, I think it, irregardless of your industry, collective experience seems to be the driving force for at least my own writing. And I think that collective experience is what drives most people to want to write. I know that there's plenty of experiences that you have that have come through your own writing. And most of my experiences, specifically the second book, which really came out of the experiences at the art gallery, that was the birth of that. My experiences over the past couple of years, really wanting to see discipleship take a forefront in the lives of Christians was what birthed the most recent book.
Yeah, because it's always, when you're going to do the writing thing, at some point you have to convince yourself that you have something to say that people want to read.
Right.
Right. So there's like a canyon jump there for every writer.
Right.
I don't know what yours was like. If you can remember a time when that sort of happened, you know, like, I should be a writer. Or you just went, I got to just tell the world this.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, again, being birthed from experiences, some of it not pleasant and wanting to just get off my chest what I needed to.
That's a great way to write too, by the way. It's a good reason.
I think just all the experiences, draw that out of you and, compel you to write and share that with others. And you realize, at the onset that maybe your voice isn't something that everybody wants to hear. It's maybe not everybody's taste.
Yeah, I've discovered that.
and I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that we're somehow going to end up becoming wealthy men and women from the books that we write, especially the ones that might be independently published. You know, there are very few New York Times bestsellers out there, and we're not amongst them.
No, not yet.
So, you know, the writing that we do has to be personal. And we have to know who our audience is and be satisfied knowing that the audience that we have, you know, is enough.
Okay. Well, speaking of that, it's because you've written three books. The first one was geared towards pastors. It's called The Pastor's Briefcase, a very practical sort of a tool guide. The second book was called The Relation Equation, and that was more a general audience and not even necessarily believers.
Right.
And that now your third book is very Christian and very discipleship. It's like you've had three totally different audiences for your books. How was that intentional at all? Or it's just, this is the way it kind of crumbles in my life.
Yeah. And I think that all three of those books came out of three very different places in my own life. And the books are reflective of that. The Relation Equation in the middle, I think, is probably the most most prevalent example of that. You know, as we were in a very secular, very art-driven, up-and-coming neighborhood in Cleveland, you know, trying to, you know, help people reconcile the cross with their art world, you know, and trying to wrap our minds around how we can build relationships and earn enough trust with individuals to be able to earn the right to share the gospel, maybe vocally with them. That whole idea was difficult for me to wrap my head around. And the book was really an expression after the fact of how I was able to wrap my mind around it. So there are a lot of technical aspects to the book, which may seem a little bit abstract, but, you know, at least in my mind, they were beneficial.
Yeah.
And I know that there have been individuals who have told me that, you know, it's helped them connect the dots in, you know, maybe failing relationships or, you know, difficult relationships that they've had.
Right. And I think it, I mean, it appeals to everyone, but I could see this really appealing to sort of a more of like an educated professional. It's almost an educated professional look at relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, I'm trying to think of how to term this. It's almost a dispassionate look at relationship. From like a business standpoint and how much equity we have in relationship and you have, I know you've told me stories of people you've worked with who have benefited from the book.
Yeah. One of the prime examples, you know, I do have a friend and colleague who, is a, well-known teacher in the Cleveland School District, very well connected and, has done a lot of good, you know, and really compelled a lot of other individuals to do good. And that has been the driving, that book was the driving force, you know, behind, you know, his way to, you know, to reconcile, you know, building relationship equity in a very impoverished neighborhood within Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So the disparity between, you know, many of just the council individuals, administration and the teachers, you know, and administration in the schools, with compared to the community at large, which, you know, is oftentimes, you know, lacking basic necessities. So how are they able to reconcile, you know, that disparity and be able to, you know, to come together and help those individuals meet their needs.
Nice. And it really, yeah. And it's just cool because so many books about relationship are so emotional and feeling driven. I love the fact that you just took a very different approach to it. And nothing wrong with the emotional feeling approach, but I think it often can send us negative directions. I want you to get into your writing process a little bit. Tell me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Let's say you've got the idea. Okay. You've got the idea for the book. What happens next? Do you typically outline your book?
Yeah. I start specifically with just an outline that doesn't look much different than my table of contents, honestly. Obviously the chapter titles are moving, so those will likely change. But and honestly, I don't write chronologically either.
Hmm.
Whatever inspiration comes to me at that point in time is what I'm going to write on, and I will begin to then piece that puzzle together over time. And then I'll fill in the gaps where necessary. But I don't have necessarily the longest attention span either.
Right.
I'm a coffee house writer, as I think you are.
Yeah, I do like to do that when I can.
Yeah, so I will take my laptop into the coffee house and stay as long as my attention will allow me to.
And the management.
Yeah, if the cups are not refillable.
Right. See, that's it really puts a crimp in the rain.
It really does.
Yeah.
Or if the scones are bad.
Well, that goes without saying.
Exactly. I do need a change of scenery quite often. And that was really the case throughout my schooling as well. Mm. The writing process is never, just as easy as sitting it down and pushing it out in one setting. And I'll say that even over the course of maybe the last 6 months, when we've been experiencing this downtime with the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
It's given me, an opportunity, maybe the Lord telling me, all right, it's time to be still and get to work. So a process that may have been a bit more fragmented and, taken a bit longer, was, I think, a bit accelerated by, the stillness of the last number of months.
So this is all your fault? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Yes. Yes. My disobedience to the Father.
We've all been suffering so that you could write.
Right.
Do you schedule in your times of writing, or do you kind of wait until you feel inspired to do so?
I generally wait until my queue at Netflix is empty, and then I'll grab my laptop and go.
Right.
But I try to schedule some time during the weekend, at least. Generally, after a work day, I'm not, greatly in the mood to.
Yeah.
To embrace the writing process.
Right. Because I find that takes even more energy than just doing the work that you're doing from 9 to 5.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's part of that creative process. And
yeah.
And you can't always schedule the creative process, as I'm sure you've experienced that.
Yeah.
It's something that when inspiration strikes you, sometimes you just have to pencil in that time and say, all right, inspiration's here and, I'm going to let it take over.
Okay. What is the hardest part of writing a book? What's the hardest part for you?
By far the editing process.
Mm.
Accepting notes back.
Mm.
And thank you, by the way, on the notes for On Your Mark. I will say that those notes were extremely helpful. But even when it comes to the formal editing, I'm very proud when it comes to even sentence structure.
Right.
And so to be told that, this doesn't make terribly great sense.
Mm.
Well, it made sense in my head.
Right. Right. But that's a big part of writing.
Right.
it's getting the thing in our head on a page so that anyone in America or in Europe or wherever can read it and get it. Wow. That is hard. That's as hard as it gets.
And it's almost a completely different dimension from preaching. And, you know, I know you have a lot of experience with that as well, that, you know, you write your sermons, and I typically will manuscript mine, and you get up to the pulpit and you speak, and what comes out necessarily doesn't sound as good as what, you know, what you wrote or what you intended. And, you know, maybe you get a comment or two after, you know, well, what did you mean by that?
Mm.
And so, you know, the writing process, you know, once that book's out there, it's in stone.
Yeah.
So your intention better be clear.
Hi there, friends. This is Otto Johnson from Otto's Autos, and for 25 years, I have been yelling on the radio to show you how excited I am about the deals we have going on at Otto's Autos. Because of that, my cardiologist has expressed his concerns and has ordered me to take it down a notch as I tell you about our fall sales. So in good faith and under doctor's orders, I have hooked myself up to this EKG to monitor my heart rhythm and stay within safe parameters. But I have to admit, it's not easy to do when I tell you we've got to clear the 2020 models and we're taking 20% off the sticker price. 20% off. Are you kidding me? You heard me right. My managers are telling me it's impossible, but I say no. And right now, you can get into a lease on a new 2021 model for only $1,000 down. Don't even bother looking because you won't find these prices anywhere in the metro area. I'm practically giving these cars away, but I've saved the biggest deal for last. Right now, for a limited time, we are offering a guaranteed $5,000 trade-in on all cars. And when I say all cars, I mean all cars. No matter what make, model, or year, it could be your grandmother's old Chrysler K. I don't care if you have to pull it, push it, tow it, or even deliver it by truck, you will receive $5,000 for that trade. These prices are insane. You must act today because.
Stand clear.
Oh, wow. Ooh, wow. Well, guess I'm back. Well, that was kind of a close one there. Well, come on down to Otto's Autos before these deals expire. Or I do. You do get to that point where hearing people's thoughts in your material, in editing, I mean, it's almost like a focus group. It's very it's very confrontational. I remember someone, I had a group of people read my novel, and someone came back to me and she goes, "I hate this guy." And I'm like, wow, you want to just like temper that a little bit maybe? And just I hate this guy. You got to change this because I am not rooting for this guy. And we will know the truth and the truth will set us free. And right. It's coming to that place of realizing that the feedback is truth. Do you take every note? Like, give me a percentage of when people send you editing notes. Do you just take all of them and be like, yes, 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 and yes? Or you're like, I'm dying on that hill.
I would say that I probably take about 2/3 of them. I never have written a text and had just one person give me feedback.
Yeah.
With On Your Mark, the last text, I had, I believe, 10 individuals, including yourself, submit notes back to me. And so if I see common threads, then I know that maybe that's something that really requires attention.
Okay, that's good.
But also, I mean, there are certain biases that each one of us carries. And the majority of the individuals that I've asked to do that are close to me. And so not only do they know my own biases, but I also know their biases. And, you know, from a theological standpoint, maybe they're not going to agree with every single point that I make.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to also give that some consideration as well.
Right.
So you kind of take everything with a grain of salt. And again, you can't be insulted or offended by, you know, the notes that you're receiving back.
Yeah.
And that's difficult to put your pride aside.
Yeah. That's great advice, though, because, boy, we need to know the truth. And mm-hmm. sometimes we're too close to it and we don't see it. And then, like you said, the counsel of many. And, you know, here's like a great tip that I sometimes give to newer authors is find 10 to 20 people and offer them a free book if they'll review the manuscript. And then, you know, go on Amazon and give you a nice, you know, rating. That doesn't hurt either. But you do, and I think you're absolutely right. If you see a consistent pattern among 5 or 6 or 10, then you go, uh-oh. You know, and I think that's such great advice because, boy, we live in a world where you just create it and then you just spew it out and, okay, deal with it. You know what I mean? It's on YouTube. Deal with it. You know,
right.
And this is a very tempered way of putting out content, but I still think it's the best, don't you?
Absolutely. And again, this last text, you know, really was more intended for others than to be an expression of my own voice. And so, you know, I wanted to be certain that it would be received and it would be received well, that it was an easy read. It wasn't an exercise in showing off my, you know, excelling vocabulary.
Right.
But it was, you know, truly something palatable.
Yeah.
Which there I'm using a $10 word.
We're very highbrow here on the Mattcast. We're a little bit like, you know, NPR that way.
Right.
So without the money.
Yes.
But I do find in your writing, Steve, that you don't, your education does not show in your writing. And because I know exactly what you're saying. There's a way you could do it to blow people out of the water and make them think it's a Harvard Law Review. I will say, do the Jesus approach and you find a more common language to connect people to the Word of God. To me, that's an art of communication, is being able to know your audience. I mean, all the great communicators do that. Whether it's Lincoln or, I mean, Reagan did that really well. And I mean, just some really great communicators in our country's history have been able to do that. Let's talk about the new book, On Your Mark. And this is this for kind of a baby Christian or just someone who wants to go deeper in Christ?
I hope it's for both and everything in between. There is plenty of biblical exposition within the text, just elaborating on the stories, the parables that Jesus told, trying to, you know, really bring to life in our modern language what he was trying to convey. And so I hope that even somebody who's been in the church all their life, somebody who, you know, has picked up their Bible every day, can read through the text and still glean something. You know, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, that was part of the context of that particular parable. But by the same token, allowing it to be, you know, a straightforward, easy enough read that, you know, somebody who is brand new to the faith can pick it up and, you know, really begin, you know, a journey with Christ and allow them to have that as a supplement to that.
And the title is such because you're plowing through the Gospel of Mark, correct? That's why the title is there.
Yeah, and excuse me, reading this book, the entire Gospel of Mark is included in that book. But believe me, I wrote the check to pay for the rights for that. So the entire book of Mark is in there. So this does not stray from the gospel. It's not going to be, you know, just my opinion of life.
What made you choose the Gospel of Mark?
The directness of Mark. I'm a rather direct person. You know, I don't like, you know, all the lead up information.
Okay.
Mark skips over the genealogy right. that Matthew includes, and
right.
you know, he really just gets down to the
and Luke's the doctor, and, so you're going to get a lot of
right.
Yeah, a lot of extra.
Exactly. So yeah, Mark is just direct, and he's to the point, and I really, you know, on your Matt and on your Luke, really just aren't as
no,
catchy.
Not yeah. Yeah, yes, definitely not. And I've Lord knows I've heard enough jokes on that with my name over the years. How have you changed as a writer over these last number of years?
I would say that my writing has been tempered quite a bit. And I really think it's gone through many different phases, starting out, you know, with seminary, you know, it was very fluffy, you know, very wordy, and it was almost required to be.
Right.
And so you'll find that in my first book. And then by the time I was entering into my MBA program, you know, I tanked my first paper simply because, you know, my writing was far too wordy, far too fluffy, and business writing needs to be succinct.
Right.
It needs to be direct and to the point.
Okay.
And so I feel like the second book was a whole lot more direct and to the point. So I saw kind of a transition in my writing there. And now with this final book, I feel that it is, you know, a reflection of, you know, taking the gospel message and trying to be as succinct as I can with my description of, you know, what I see going on.
Right. This is not a commentary.
Right. There are better commentaries out there.
Well, and you purposely, you know, you weren't going for that. Everything is done to facilitate growth in the Christian's life. And so again, right, it's void of a lot of the extra stuff, which, you know, sometimes I love the extra stuff. But if you have someone who, especially if they're kind of unchurched or newly churched, then this is probably a great book to give them because it's not going to have a lot of the fluff. And it's just the facts, ma'am, meat and potatoes kind of a book. At least it seems that way to me.
Right. You're not going to find, you know, definitions of Greek words.
Right.
Within the text. You know, it's just going to be something that you can pick up and you can structure in your own reading. You know, it is split up into three sections. on your mark is the first section, just preparing us. Get set is, you know, how we're walking with Jesus, what he's teaching us along the way. And then there's a point where, you know, we have to be released. And obviously, right. Jesus, his Holy Spirit, is always with us. But there's a point where we have to take action on what we have received. And so the final section of the book is go.
Nice.
On your mark, get set, go.
Nice.
And that final section, I hope, is something that can compel us to be agents of change for Christ in our world. Mm.
I don't know if you've had an experience like this, but maybe you have people approach you. Once they know you've written something, they'll say, you know, I'd really like to write a book, and I'd like to. And really, you know, with technology as it is, anybody can be an author today. I mean, you and I are proof of that. but I don't know if you've had someone approach you with that. What would you tell them if they did ask you?
What is your intention?
Hmm.
You know, again, you know, you're not going to get rich off of this.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, I hope that I break even with this last book. We'll see how that goes. But again, that's not the intent. Mm. And you have to be okay with that. Mm. So if you are writing for the right reasons, if, you know, your desire is to tell the world something that that you know or that you've experienced that they need to hear, then great, go for it. But again, be willing to accept that criticism along the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's just like anything else in life. It's not going to come out perfect the first time. I think that you had in a previous MattCast even mentioned that you spoke with somebody who inquired of you about the writing process and wondered how to get better at writing. And you said, well, you have to keep writing.
Right.
And that's spot on. Mm-hmm. You must keep writing. Your writing will get better. And reading. Mm. You know, you learn a lot by reading other authors. You begin to find your own voice. You know, you find what works for you, what doesn't.
Yeah, that's good. And expanding your vocabulary, because it gives you more tools on the tool belt. You know, words are our friend in this work. And learning more words, I mean, you know, you don't try to just shimmy them in there to look like, you know, I do word power. But it's the ability to create pictures and even introduce people to words that they don't know. Oh my word, do we need that today more than ever? It's just the expansion of vocabulary. And this is such an amazing language, the English language is. And I think you're right. Reading absolutely does that. So how can people get a hold of your books?
Right now it's solely on Amazon, electronically, as well as a paper copy. The electronic version, I set priced extremely low, so that it is very accessible. Yeah, right on Amazon, On Your Mark.
Or your name, Steve Rosenberger. Those are all E's in your last name.
Correct.
If people want to do a search.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know, you got a lot on your mind, you know. Excellent. Steve, I want to thank you for your time. Thanks for sharing some wisdom from us here on the MattCast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt.
And I want to thank Steve Rosenberger for being my guest on the MattCast. Be sure to get a copy of On Your Mark, available now on Amazon. And we appreciate you being a part of the MattCast. Our theme music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. For more information about our books and resources, go to mattministry.com. Hey, thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.